Thank you very much, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, for inviting me here, especially to CEDA. And I would like to first say that having heard it this morning, I decided to change my presentation a bit. And so my original presentation is already in your kit. Kindly bear with me if there are some disordered slides there. I've tried to focus more on partnerships needed in climate change, what should be the agenda, and how should we include poor into this agenda, because climate change is primarily a problem which is a reason because of inequity in this world. How we wish we had grown at the same time when the developed countries were growing in 40s and 50s, let's say, and had we been growing at the same time then, perhaps the climate change problem would have arisen much earlier, and at the same time that there would not have been so much inequity as 19 tons for the US citizen and 1 ton for an Indian one, and probably we would have solved this much more efficiently and possibly more with equity. Our low emissions brought down world average to such an extent that it was not visible for quite some time, the implications of certain consumption patterns. There's another inequity which is arising in the due to the fact that those who emit are not suffering or adapting, or damage or vulnerability is not in the equal proportion of their emissions. Had that been the case, perhaps different kind of responses may have emerged, just as we have in the local pollution problems, where people have devised mechanisms to polluters pay and certain regulatory mechanisms and so on, and that is absent, particularly since we don't have the world government and so on. So let's talk about how we continue with the partnership, since I see business people here. Maybe one can talk about that also. First of all, of course, response could be reducing emissions in their own countries. However, when I talk about partnerships, I'm talking about Annex 1 and non-Annex 1 partnerships, and one can lend helping hand to developing countries' businesses by technologies, best technologies, best practices, purchasing carbon credits, or joint technology development suited for large population. The current technologies we have, if we start, billions of people in developing countries start using them, we know that they lead to disaster. So how can we go and branch out or leapfrog the kind of development we had earlier? So we have also to think about certain debt, carbon debt that has occurred, and perhaps corporate social responsibility, CSR. I'm sure many of you have the programs of CSR, and unfortunately there are people, about 300 million in my country, who earn less than a dollar a day, but globally they are about 1.5 billion or something of that order. So they emit 100 kilogram to 200 kilogram of CO2 compared to 4,200 or 4.2 tons for global average, 11 tons by Annex 1, 8 tons by EU, and 19 tons by US. I think Australia is about 20 also. But here you can see the changes that have happened since 1990. As you can see, the China, which was not so ahead before, has now came close to the United States. US itself has added practically 1 billion ton, which is what India is emitting now. So one whole India is added in the US emissions. You have Russia is the third place, fourth place is Japan, India is close to that, and so on. So here one sees that even if some countries, although India and is the only country perhaps below, way below global world average, and even more, less than half of the, about a quarter of it. So, and here are the some other indicators. We also need to see not only CO2 per capita, which is on the second column, but also CO2 per GDP. And that's what we had also talked about earlier. Some people have spoken about energy intensities. You could see, if you adjust for the purchasing power parity, India is close to the, some of the efficient countries like Japan and Germany and UK and so on. This is International Energy Agency statistics that has come out recently in 2005. This is a table from just selected top 10 countries here. And somehow we wish we would be as growing as much as China, but unfortunately our emissions are rather, our GDP growth is less, as well as our emissions are less. And in future, it seems that China has made a lot of adjustments during the 1995-2000 period, but sometimes some of these adjustments of the energy inefficiency, which were there around earlier, have been removed now, and then now it can rise again, and maybe that kind of future might arise for India's case also. As I said, 600 million people don't have electricity in India, and 300 million don't have electricity. 600 million people are still using biofuels to cook, and so there are no LPG and kerosene for them. So what are the agenda for partnerships? It could be between NX1 and non-NX1 countries. It would be between NGOs and governments in non-NX1 countries, for including poor in climate change. I understood some people criticize CDM mechanism, but I think it has generated a lot of enthusiasm, and it has created a positive climate in Indian businesses, and Indian businesses have now submitted something like, it's the highest country with highest CDM applications, though our share in the certified emissions reduction is not as high, but the number of projects are very high. And this would not have happened if there was no CDM. In fact, before CDM, the awareness of climate change itself was so low, and that has changed, and that is a very positive thing. We have heard Matt also speaking about certain initiatives that we have taken, and I would say some of them are by governments, but quite a lot of them are private initiatives also. We could say the focus should be now on greenfield projects, because we do intend to grow, and when we grow, the large investments are being pumped into the economy for new power plants, new steel mills, and how can we have these new initiatives not as car CO2 carbon intensive or GHG intensive as the previous investments. And they are made very rapidly, and various partnerships are needed urgently. Asia Pacific Partnership, I was here a year ago as a government delegate that time, but right now I'm speaking as a research director and not as a government delegate. But India has supported clean development and climate proposals. But I have one reservation, which is that it has no financial incentives. And for that, I refer back to some of the proposals that Matt discussed, which are rather refreshing and which have certain constructive and cooperative suggestions, which would, I think, go further. So if we take two types of approaches for the business partnerships, one is on the technical side and another is on the corporate social responsibility side, CSR, and I would say sectoral approach. One can think of production sectors, steel, aluminium, fertilizer, cement. These are energy intensive or greenhouse gas intensive sectors, and here you have to deal with mainly producers, though consumers can also reduce consumption, but essentially better technologies are the key issues. The energy sector, as I said, coal power, and we are already making headways into renewable nuclear and hydropower. We should also look at the consumption sector, where transport energy, where the consumer is behind the wheel, and building, where the consumers decide what appliance is to use. So that is also another issue. This sectoral approach, I should say, partnerships, it's more suited to large countries like India, China, Brazil, South Korea, South Africa, etc., because they have a complex economy. They are making everything of this. And what we can do is bring energy efficiency standards, labels, building codes, and here partnerships would matter. So here we could look at technology upgradation, best available technology, international technology cooperation. China leads the world in steel for 35% of the world production now. Cement contributes 5% of the world total CO2 emissions. India, well, China is first in almost all production sectors, but India, Saudi Arabia are also in top 10 in many of the sectors. In fact, India is second largest in the world for cement sector. So, but it may be 102nd in per capita emissions, but we can all join in this effort. Well, I explained this already. In the energy sector itself is a big emitter. You have power plants, which are converters of energy from primary to secondary energy, and they emit. They are responsible for emissions and oil refineries and so on. Also, we need to have now partnerships that they withstand these extreme events. You need to build them differently. We don't know how, as it was mentioned, Himalayan changes in the Himalayan ecosystems, how many hydropower plants will suffer, what sort of fate. We have no idea yet, and that needs to be researched. And these extreme events, such as typhoon cyclones, and floods and droughts, can also affect some of these energy sectors. Energy efficiency is prime criteria for determining manufacturing process. We should ensure that, especially for the greenfield projects and new projects. Products and purchase decisions should be household appliances and industrial machineries for large-scale infrastructures. And green procurement in the government is being discussed in the Prime Minister's Climate Change Council, which, as I mentioned, I am a member of that. But currently, the procurement in the government favors lowest bidder. So how do we ensure that the lowest bidder is GHG intensive, and what kind of incentives can be given for greenhouse gas friendly government procurements? So we have discussed this already, use of fossil fuels, and poor need to certainly have their LPG and kerosene needs. We should not deny them that in the name of climate change you cannot have these. But projects on renewable options should not also leave poor on the margins of decision making. They should be centrally consulted and to reduce vulnerabilities, and their role is very high in recycling and waste management. Many of them are, India is one of the least waste emitting country in per capita terms, and primarily due to some poor people who keep recycling these products and reusing them also. I would like to divert some focus to other developing countries also, which are equally, if not more, but somehow India, China has become the targets, but and Brazil. But there are other countries who are emitting as much as some of the European countries, like Saudi Arabia has 13.83 per ton per capita, and they are all, well, I should have reversed that, then it would be like Spain. Korea is like Italy, and more than emits more than, you should see, is there a... Anyway, this per capita, two per capita columns is what you should be seeing. South Africa also is emitting as much as France and more in terms of per capita, Iran, Malaysia, Venezuela. So one would think that if you take the above global average countries or at the global average, there are about 22 or so, they emit, they are non-NX1 countries, but their emissions are rather high. So we are now looking at four criteria: per capita emissions, global per capita emissions average, total emissions approach, which people are talking about here, which is to be coupled with sectoral approach, carbon intensity, which means CO2 per GDP, or CO2 per GDP adjusted by purchasing power parity. So one thing also one can talk about, I have discussed this three-tier system within the developing countries. One can look at above global average and below global average. The above global average are 22 countries with 4.81, and the below global average, there are 95 countries, and their per capita is about 1.23. That brings the world average 4.2. So 93 countries are emitting 15% of the emissions, and India is one of them. But there are Brazil and many other countries are also one of them. Mexico, Argentina is not Mexico. Yeah. So we talked about this. Carbon capture and storage. I think no matter how many carbon saving technology you use, we at least many of the large countries are using coal, and we should see whether there are some advantages here and disadvantages also, and whether they can be balanced. We are in my institute, IRADE is organizing international conference on carbon capture and storage in January 22nd and 23rd. And I hope some of you can participate and come there. We are also holding another conference on energy technology that would be in February. So we have here, let me summarize this sectoral approach and technology approach partnerships into technical and economic and managerial aspects. One is the technical approach, we look at the sectoral emissions with and without financial incentives, whereas in the economic and managerial aspects, you look at the CO2 intensities, how you can use the tools like pricing and management, and that for that the indicators are CO2 per GDP. So this is the kind of summary you have, that we need to have more than one approach. Kyoto and is not enough. We should have sectoral approach is one idea, the global per capita average and splitting the NX1 into non-NX1 into above global and below global is another. So there are several alternatives you will need. Just as in the energy sector, we don't have just nuclear or just coal or just oil. You need all of them. And then the different approaches will cover different countries and they will come forward. India has shown willingness to come forward in sectoral approach, and it's an active member of Asia-Pacific Partnership. We just had the... 2 weeks ago we had an Asia-Pacific Partnership meeting in New Delhi, and Matt has mentioned many other things, making my job easier. One should also look at now CSR issues and vulnerability issues. And as I said, those who are emitting 0.1 ton or 100 kilograms are the worst sufferers, and there will be vulnerability and adaptation issues for them. They are more affected because of the weak institutional capacity and precarious financial situation. Helping hand is needed for our farmers to engage adaptive farming practices. They are small farmers operated by poor, and food security is one issue linked with that. And some time back we had done a model for India, my PhD student, and for the whole India we had 186 cells using the global climate simulated work for 550 ppmv, and we found that it could lead to 9% reduction in the wheat and rice production. And the poor are especially engaged in subsistence food production. They are producers as well as consumers of their own food, and that's what makes it harder for them, because who knows, perhaps the market prices of food may go up, but since they are eating what they produce, that's not the benefit they get. CSR can also expand to address climate issues. They have to be lifted above poverty levels, and insurance companies especially can come up with innovative packages to address vulnerabilities and vulnerable groups in rural areas. So as climate change I meant, as can be linked into three sectors: adaptation, mitigation and engagement. Adaptation is about natural resources, agriculture, forest, water and coastal zone. Risks and vulnerabilities include health, extreme events, basic needs, and mitigation, as we've already covered, sectoral approaches in energy efficiency, renewables, recycling and CDM. But what we need in terms of policy action engagement is the capacity building in knowledge management, in participation of developing countries with knowledge management and with capacity building, research and development that includes their priorities and their abilities, decision by making and budget allocation and monitoring. If you look at the natural resource that I just mentioned here, we already talked about agriculture. There was little, it should have been first. Now we come to water. Here again, existing shortages of water will get worse, and we will have women largely responsible for water collection and water quantity will be suffering from that, and 40-60% reduction in water level in the large basin is seen. I'm talking about in the developing countries, but also in South Asia. Water harvesting and storage systems are needed, and strengthening water resources and delivery systems can be done best with people's help. Coastal zones, again, it was mentioned earlier that the large civilizations came along the coastal areas, and all our large cities, Mumbai, Calcutta, Chennai, you mentioned so many of them, are on the coast, and they are vulnerable in terms of sea level rise. And seawater gets into fresh water, also making the water scarcity worsen. Livelihoods are affected, and governments are trying to build embankments to protect the population, and infrastructure is in danger. But then poor can be protected and help. They can be used for making these embankments and so on to generate livelihood. Forest resources are also vulnerable, and they are major source of livelihood for increasing number of poor, and shortage of non-timber forest products causes malnutrition, infant mortality and so on, and we need to have better forest management practices. Risks and insurance. The insurance industry is a several trillion dollar industry, and new initiatives have come up there. Green building credits are given by the insurance in terms of premium. Drought protection in developing countries can be given, and perhaps some arrangement can be done so as to ensure our vulnerable poor. Finally, there is a carbon debt that has occurred, and we are treating it as a global problem. When you talk about costs, and you say X percent of GDP is lost, that is sometimes not the it is over the business as usual GDP, but the business as usual GDP wouldn't be there in the first place if you consider climate change impacts and adaptations. But insurance focus companies are not quite focused on the climate change issue yet, but now some of them have started to offer products, for example, renewable energy related insurance products, green home property insurance policy.
Doctor, I need to give you one more minute.
One more minute.
I have to be a stern
then
taskmaster.
I would just say India's efforts, you've already heard from Matt, emphasis on energy conservation, promotion of renewable energy, abatement of air pollution. And last slide, which says that let's hope that this adversity leads to some opportunity for collaboration and cooperation. We can try to fix many things which were wrong to begin with. I think the first signal we got in terms of oil price rise, we didn't quite get that signal, so now the new signal comes in terms of climate change. We could bring better harmony through cooperation and partnerships and sustainable development that does not deny rights to some countries to eradicate poverty and ensure equity. And I think it can be done. Thank you.